Streaming in this realm and beyond, you're listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio with your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeProspero.
And welcome to Paranormal Investigator Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We are, as they said at BBS Radio, alive. I'm Peter.
And I'm Rich.
And I'm Kevin.
And tonight we're going to talk about all kinds of ghoulish stuff. We're going to give away free candy. I had to give something away.
I'm drinking wine, so I'm going to laugh at everything during the show tonight.
Those are the wrong kinds of spirits, Rich.
Nah, it's the only spirits that I like these days.
They come in red and white, right?
Red preferably, you know, white, you know, if it's cold, whatever, it works.
Are there any haunted wineries?
I'm sure there are. I'm sure Napa Valley's got probably a good dozen or so of them. So it's interesting because, you know, we have a lot of wineries here in upstate New York. And you can get some pretty good white wines here. You can get some decent reds, but the problem is the growing season isn't really long enough. And we don't really get a lot of sunlight enough of it here in order for the grapes to grow that really thick skin that they need to make a really dry red. So, you know, when you see a New York dry red, you're probably better off just getting the white and then stick to your California dry reds because they have that nice long growing season. Which has nothing to do with the paranormal, by the way, but...
The weather in upstate New York is, however, paranormal. We just got our first snowfall.
Yeah, I woke up Sunday morning. We were supposed to have an investigation set up for Saturday night, which kind of fell through. You know, things happen. And then I woke up Sunday morning. My wife wanted to go to the gym, and she's like, you need to get up and clean the car off. I go, what? I looked out the window of the bedroom, and I'm like, oh, my God, there's like 8 to 10 inches of snow on the ground. That was ridiculous. I was out there shoveling for 2 hours cleaning that crap up.
Yeah, I got lucky. I woke up to your post probably about 10 minutes after you posted it is when I woke up. I looked outside and we only had a dusting at my house.
And you're actually
up north.
Yeah, you're up north on the hills. You'd think you would have got a little bit more, but I live in that southern tier part of Oneida County where I think we get more of that lake effect where I am through Vernon. Vernon, Verona, Vernon Center, Deansboro, Waterville, we seem to get hit. Clinton, too.
Yeah.
Clinton seems to get hit pretty good with snow as well. That's a nice wing, Oneida County. But for those of you who don't understand, lake effect snow is that big, big flake snow that's supposed to come off Lake Ontario, the Great Lakes. And then when it comes across New York through like Oswego and Syracuse, they really get pounded with it. Then it goes by Oneida Lake, and I think it builds up a little more momentum. Yeah. And then it hits us people here in Oneida County. So.
And there's 7 foot tall snowflakes there. No.
Oh, the problem is they're huge. And it could literally snow for a half hour and you could have literally 3 to 4 inches of snow because those flakes are so big. And it's that really moist stuff. So you try to drive in it and you just, even with four-wheel drive and studded tires, you're sliding all over the place.
Hey, I'm just happy that tonight's going to get cold and then sort of warm up through the rest of the week. All the snow's going to be gone.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that happens.
So if you have any pressing questions and you'd like to call in, 1-888-429-5471. Once again, the phone lines are open, 1-888-429-5471. Bigfoot, UFOs, alien encounters, government conspiracies, and yes, anything that's spooky.
And if you want your local weather forecast, just ask. We'll pull that
don't
up.
Don't ask us how it's really made, because we'll make something up.
Do you think the weather and the paranormal are related at all?
They always say thunderstorms, right? But we've investigated in them. I don't think it's really affected.
Well, nothing that I've climate change does the terrorist actions, isn't it?
So. Well, that's true.
Well, I think climate affects people more so than they think. You know what I mean? Why would it not affect the paranormal world as well? Because I think it's all one world. I mean, I think ultimately I'm going to go on a limb here, and some people are going to hate me for saying this, and some people are like, yeah, totally, I agree with you, Rich, or Pete. My name is Pete, actually. So if you really like this concept I'm going to talk about, then it's Rich. If you really dislike it, then my name is Pete. So anyways,
Pete.
We're all kind of on this planet all at the same time. If you ever watch The Flash, you guys watch The Flash at all on CW? he had this like whole thing where there's like different worlds, and they're all, they vibrate at a different frequency, but they're all at the same time. So we're all like here all at the same time. We just like can't bump into each other because we're all at like a different point in time or something. So that's almost like kind of the paranormal is, you know what I mean? So why wouldn't weather here affect weather there? You know what I'm saying? If it's cold in this room and there's a spirit that's here, do they actually feel that? I mean, because they draw energy. And so, I mean, they, you know, thermal is a form of energy. So essentially, does their energy get suppressed because there's not enough energy to draw from if there's no one here, say?
I mean, that kind of changes up on, you know, some of the theories about why it gets cold in a room.
Yeah, because they're drawing thermal energy out of the room, leaving a cold spot.
So that means...
What if it's cold to begin with?
Are they adjusting the energy in the room, or are we feeling the energy that they're feeling at that point?
Yeah, that's a good question. That seems to be the million-dollar question. And once we get that problem solved, I think that we should, folks, have our own paranormal reality show.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think.
We are available, so if anybody's a casting agent, please give us a call, 1-888-429-5471.
We're also available for bar mitzvahs, senior parties,
children's
and bingo
parties.
Yeah,
don't forget...
a heck of a clown.
What are those lady things? What are they called?
Jack and Jill parties?
No, without the Jack. Jill party.
Right. Jill parties? Okay.
They're stag parties for men. What do guys... What do they have?
Dope.
Yeah, I don't know.
The dough parties?
Showers. Bachelorette. I couldn't think of it. I'm not even the one having wine, and I can't even think. But.
We did do a paranormal party one time. We didn't know it was a paranormal party when we showed up. The people reached out to us, oh, we're having problems. Please help us. We need your help. Rome investigators of the paranormal. So we're like Superman. We're coming. Dun, dun, dun. We took off, showed up. We walk in. Wow, there's a lot of food laid out here. Are they really nice? And then we saw the drunk people in the living room. Nah, crap. It's a paranormal party. And then pretty much we were the entertainment for the night. And so we had to, you know, since we're there, we're inconvenienced. We went like an hour's drive out of our way to go to this place to help these people. And it got to the point where it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. It was me, Pete, and a couple of investigators. I can see in everyone's eyes, everyone's like, we just want to go home. It's just really nothing going on here.
Well, I kind of wanted to just go to McDonald's or something.
Yeah, we're hungry because they laid all this food, but by the time we were ready to eat it, I think it was kind of like sitting around for a couple hours. So it was getting kind of nasty. So I know Pete was upstairs. I'm sitting downstairs watching the TV and the DVR cameras. I can see Pete up in the room with all these women drunk, sitting on the bed, calling for the spirits. And I can just see Pete's expression because I've known him long enough where he's like, oh, dear Lord, get me out of here. So I go to the girl, the daughter that was living there. I go, can I do something? I just want to let you know what I'm going to do. She goes, what are you going to do? I want to scare the crap out of these people. It was her mother, okay, aunts and cousins. She goes, oh, my God, do it. So I creeped up the stairs as quietly as I could. There were hardwood floors upstairs. And I listened in for a little bit. And they're like, oh, could you give us a sign? So I'm like knocking on the thing. They're like, oh, my God, oh, my God. And meanwhile, I knew Pete was kind of like thinking, yeah, something's going on. This is can't be, you know, it's too convenient to happen. So then I ran back downstairs and they're all laughing. I go, wait a minute. I found this like big pen. I go, watch this. So I ran up the stairs and they're in there. Oh, spirits, can you give us a sign? So I threw the pen up in the air. And when it hit the hardwood floor, it was loud. I mean, it was loud. It was like, boom. And they all started screaming and freaking out. And of course, Alex runs out of his meter. I shall find where the activity is. And meanwhile, I run down as fast as I could and get in front of the screen and watch what's going on. And I could see Pete shaking his head. He's like, yep, it was Rich. I could just tell by the expression on his face in the camera that, I mean, obviously he was not fooled. Meanwhile, Alex is like walking around his meter trying to find something. And I'm like, dear Lord.
I mean,
we'll just end this night.
I don't mind the party if we knew ahead of time. It was just, it literally was one of them things. We left work, we made the drive out there. And then it's like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, just spring it on you guys like that. I mean, I know you guys are just as much as I am. I'm a firm believer that if you're going to help someone, you don't charge them for your, you know, being there to help them in the paranormal.
No, we've never charged anybody. No.
But for that, I mean, It almost seems like you should give him a bill after that one. I mean, to be entertainment.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Some of it was hilarious. Like, I had them all up in one of the rooms with the spirit box running. And they were so inebriated that they're like, "Hey, fellas, are you there? Oh, my God, she's there." It was like just a little, like, static. And it's like, they're like, "Is it? That was Uncle Frank. But wait, Uncle Frank's not dead. Why is Uncle Frank on the box? Talk to us, Uncle Frank. Shh. Oh, my God." And it's like, you know, so you try not laughing.
That was the women you had. The guys are all passed out drunk on the couch. The men are all, like, just, like, totally, like, just laid out and snoring away. They're completely gone.
So, Rich, did you have ESPN and read the question that came in from Jenny in Bismarck, North Dakota?
I love Bismarck, North Dakota. I've actually been there. What's the question?
We don't have to get into that right now. I'm just saying it's more of like a statement.
Oh, okay. What'd you say?
Not really a statement. I don't really know. I'll just surmise this gigantic.
Oh, it's a couple paragraphs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, she was asking about the theory that you choose the life that you want to go into in an incarnation. Meaning you specifically chose Rich. So her roundabout question is, what is this we're in? That means, are we like a play? Like a cosmic play where people are actually choosing to play us as a character? Meaning the future's already happened, everything's already happened, and they're coming back from this main source. Is that making sense, what I'm trying to surmise? It's a very confusing thing.
Yeah,
it's
sort of
like they say, you're choosing Kevin. Kevin chose Kevin. You chose to be Rich. And why the hell I chose to be me, I don't know. But what are they seeing that they want to choose us to go through this incarnation before they return to, or our energy or whatever returns to?
I'm sure each one of us is going to chime in on this. So why don't we start with Kevin, because he had the first remark. So
I'm pretty sure I touched on this on a previous radio show. Basically, mine comes from an experience from my family. My niece of my sister, when she was younger, she was about 3 or 4 years old, she actually told my sister and her husband at the time that she didn't choose to be in this family. And her mother asked her, you know, what did you mean by that? She said, when I was up in heaven and looking down, I didn't see that you already had kids. And my sister and at that time brother-in-law did have kids at that point. They had a son and a daughter already. Now, what was interesting about that is their son and daughter weren't really home too much because they worked all the time. So their son and daughter would be at my parents' house, and pretty much my mother raised them. So when she told them that, when I saw you guys, I didn't see that you had kids. That's why I decided to come to you, because I thought I'd be an only child. Which is just this really, you know, mind-blowing when you think about it.
And there's a lot of stories about children saying, yes, I selected you.
Yeah.
But see, like, I think that, why, like, we just had that rash of horrible fires in upstate New York. Yeah. I mean, we've been losing kids left and right. Not that, I mean, it's a horrible tragedy, but, like, why would you come back as an 8-year-old kid that's going to die in a fire? You know what I mean? Why would you choose that incarnation? What are you learning?
Well, I don't think you get to see the full life that you're going to lead, is where I'm going with this. Okay. You see the mother and father, and it's like you choose.
So it's not already happened. You're making it happen.
I mean, there's tons of theories. I mean, I have at least 3 or 4 theories myself, and, you know, that's another radio show and a half, probably. But, I mean, what are you guys thinking about?
Well, it's a pretty deep question, and, you know, I don't know if there's a right or a wrong other than just someone's personal belief, but essentially I've been told by others that I'm an old soul, that essentially that I come from a past, and essentially I went to two different psychics that, I mean, I didn't intentionally go to psychics to get information. I just knew them, and I was talking to them. And each one told me that I have a military background. And I said, why do you say that? Because you're stern, you're analytical, and you want to lead into and go into battle. And essentially, if your men are shot or stabbed or whatever, you get up and run directly at the enemy. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's kind of me. I can see myself doing that. So, so what does that mean, essentially, that how come I don't remember? I mean, other than I feel like that, I mean, I'm very headstrong and fearless, but at the same time, I don't remember any of that. You know what I'm saying? How can they pick that up on me, but I don't remember any of that? If I went to someone and tried to look at repressed memories, would that come out? You know what I'm saying? So I guess I do sort of, or I'm starting to, believe in the whole concept of reincarnation, that essentially I was someone else at one time. But I just don't understand why we can't remember of it. Why is it suppressed? Why would we not wake up in this body and say, oh, back in the 1800s I was this, or in the 1600s I was that. You know what I'm saying? And why do, I mean, look at, take a look at like the animal kingdom. Are they actual reincarnations? Is a wasp a reincarnation of somebody else? Is there a hierarchy? Are there animals just creatures of the planet, organic things that were just grown the way they were and evolved the way they did? So, I mean, there's just a lot of different things. Why are people selectively like have reincarnation and animals don't? You know, I mean, it's just, there's just so much, I don't know, it's just so many questions to it. It's just tough to answer that. But I think in the spirit world, I think that when someone dies, their soul is like this little orb that's placed into the body. And essentially when the body dies, because it's a product of this organic environment with gravity, age, chemicals, it only goes so long. And then essentially when it dies, that life source leaves the body. Now, that life source has to go someplace. And essentially I think if it becomes a spirit, at least from my findings of a spirit and my witnesses of a spirit, that they actually still roam in these locations, either by choice or not, but I think they're at a different time, in a different dimension, where they, like, we communicate to spirits and we ask questions and we get questions back. Maybe they're doing the same thing to us. Maybe they have their own little spirit boxes and they're saying, who is this? Can you hear us? Can we offer you help? And meanwhile, we're like, are you there? Hello? Can you hear me? So maybe it's like this back and forth communication that we're reaching out to them. Maybe they're reaching out to us, and that's why we actually communicate. You know? So that's my whole weird take on everything. So, Peter?
If you'd like to weigh in, 1-888-429-5471. Again, 1-888-429-5471. So, you know, me being the ball buster here, as soon as Kevin said that, I had the mental picture of it. Like, we're all in this space chamber up in wherever, middle space, and we're all energy, and it's like, oh my God, they need somebody down there? Here, hold my coffee cup, watch this crap, and then there I am, and next thing you know, I'm Donald Trump, and it's just...
I think I'm, but, since I became a paranormal investigator, I think I fear death a lot less.
Yeah.
I think because now I've seen, you know, some of the investigations that I've been on, especially Pete, many investigations I've actually been on with Pete, I've witnessed things that kind of took me from a skeptic. Because Pete was a believer from a young child because of his experiences. And he shared that with me, but never tried to convince me or try to push me in that direction other than say, I believe it's real and this is why. So when I started doing it, you know, I did my own thing before I joined RIP. And I had some weird, unexplainable things, voices, stuff, and I thought, oh, it's a ghost. But I still wasn't really sure enough to put my finger on it to sign the dotted line. But then when we did some investigations together, when I saw spirits like that Woodgate experience, that was one of the things, the Hulbert House, and a few others just pushed me to the point where I'm like, yeah, I believe it. It's there. It happens. So now I firmly believe when we die that we're meant to become something else and go someplace. That's just not the end of all ends. You know, it's like another stage. You know, so I firmly believe that now. So, because I know that's one of the two things people are scared of so much is death and taxes. And taxes scare the hell out of me. Every tax season I get nervous. But yeah. Death is the main thing. Everybody's so scared. They believe it's like the end. That's it. Nothing else ever will happen to me again. I'm done. And I don't think that's true.
Why would you want to live like that? I'm sorry.
It's really hard to believe that it would actually be just done at the end. Like, right. Why are we here then?
And I'm not even talking like the Bible and God and Jesus and all that kind of stuff. I'm leaving the religious element out of it. I'm just talking in general, the science. Yeah. You know, that essentially that obviously, you know, something makes Kevin Kevin, something makes Rich Rich, something makes Pete Pete.
Yeah.
And when we die, there's a reason why we're different. Okay, there's genetics, this, that, and everything, but there's still a soul that gets planted in there. Two people can appropriate and have a human being, or an animal can appropriate and create life. So if that can happen, why does life have to end when that body dies?
And it's not just strictly for human beings either, like you're saying with an animal. Like recently, this past summer, my parents had two Great Danes. They're twins. And this past summer, one of them died. He was just 6 years old. They're pretty sure that his heart just gave out, and that was it. The other day, I think it was Easter Sunday, I was over at my parents' house, and I walked out to the garage in the back, and as I'm walking out there, out of the corner of my eye, I saw my parents' dog come running at me. I mean, it's a Great Dane. You can't miss it. It's a fawn-colored Great Dane, so it looks like there's a deer running at you.
Yeah, they're big.
And I turned, and there was nothing there. So, I mean, that tells me that my parents' other dog that just passed away is still there. That for me, that's the first time I've seen an animal spirit that I believe that I saw.
But do you think that maybe it's not a spirit? Do you think maybe that they say we utilize such a small percentage of our brain? The subconscious is like the big memory bank where everything we plug in there, all of our experiences, even stuff we don't even remember, just looking and seeing stuff, it all gets plugged in there. Do you think that somewheres maybe that's the next level, that subconscious? Right now we're living as humans with our conscious mind. Maybe the sex that we die is we're no longer human. Now it's our subconscious mind that becomes us, our spirit. And then everything we've learned and seen in our lifetimes that's in the subconscious mind now becomes what we are. So going back to the dog, is this something maybe there was an energy, something triggered it that in your subconscious mind to see that dog, where versus was actually the dog coming at you as a spirit, but maybe something that animal spirit was just an energy source and it hit you and something came out of your subconscious mind to make you see that dog? I mean, there's a lot I've been seeing online. There's a lot of people starting to tie in the subconscious to the paranormal, that maybe it isn't a ghost. Maybe it isn't a spirit. Maybe it's the subconscious mind, maybe the step of evolution, you know, where we go. Because, again, did you ever notice, like, for instance, here's a just a quaint little cute example of this. I remember I wanted to get a red Harley Davidson motorcycle. That's what I wanted. And all the time I'm walking around, I mean, sure, there's Harley zipping by me and this and that. They're all over the place, right? But as soon as I decided that I wanted this bike, I planted it into my brain someplace. Every time I walked someplace, all of a sudden, I would turn and I would see it. Anytime it was around me, I would see it. Even if I heard a motorcycle, I would turn around and there it is. And I would hear, sometimes I hear a motorcycle, I wouldn't even turn around. But when I did, it was always that bike I was looking for. Somehow it got planted in my mind. I was always seeing it everywhere as I went. You know what I mean? It's just almost like the subconscious mind pulled it out and said, okay, this is something you want. I'm going to help you get to your goal. I'm going to help you see this. And I kept seeing them everywhere. And then I bought it. And then that whole thing just kind of like faded away and stopped.
Well, were you actually seeing the bike?
I was actually seeing the bike.
So
yeah.
You weren't imagining it.
No, but I'm saying the subconscious mind is a powerful thing, essentially.
Yeah, but at the same time, it might be your subconscious is letting you only see the red bikes.
True.
I mean,
very true.
You might have heard a motorcycle come in, you saw the red Harley, but you didn't see that there was a black Yamaha riding in front of it.
Right. It kind of pointed me in the direction of what I wanted to see, of what my desire was, what I wanted to see.
But with my story, it's kind of like, you know, there wasn't another dog there to kind of offset it.
Right.
But to me, that's more along the theory that I've always had. And I've told it, like, I'm not really, I haven't researched it. But I've been told that my theory is more along the lines of what the Japanese believe, which is basically it's two parallel planes, and we live on one plane, and then there's another.
Almost like different dimensions.
Yes. So we're living in two different dimensions. They're parallel. They run alongside each other. When you see or experience a ghost or a spirit, it's actually a rift in those dimensions that cross over. So you're seeing a ghost in that, that time.
A viable theory.
That's why they might be seeing you as well.
Right. Right. And that's a completely viable theory. And again, I still think the subconscious mind plays a point where essentially that if ghosts, if people die and they become conscious, part of some big conscious mind, that they can come out to you and reach out to you and hit your subconscious and basically like, look. Yep. And you're like, oh, I just saw that. You know what I'm saying? That's my example. I use the example of how I can basically tune my subconscious mind to look at things and how essentially that I think spirits can also tune in to our subconscious mind to make us, look, I want you to see this. I want you to see me. You know what I mean?
In that same thought, as paranormal investigators, we really got to start trying to train ourselves not to let our subconscious get a hold of
us. Well, it's tough. I mean, and the thing is that a lot of times when they go in, a lot of times people want to tell you all the stories of what's going on and this and that. And a lot of times, I just wander off.
Yeah.
Because I don't want them to predetermine me to believe that I'm going to see this or that. I want to go in with a clean slate and look around and see what I see, what I experience, then correlate it to what they said. Perfect example, we did an investigation up north, and we did a Frank Box session up in a bedroom, and we were talking to this woman's deceased husband. And I said, why don't you give me three questions that I would not know? I'll ask the questions. If I can give you the answers, then will you believe that they're possibly I am actually talking to your deceased husband? She agreed. She's like, yes. Okay, so she gave me the questions, and the answers came back, and I just told her what the answers were. I didn't know what they were. Not like, is he a male? Did he die? I mean, it's like, how did you die? What was your favorite hobby? Where did you like to travel to? Things like that. I didn't know. I didn't spend a lot of time talking to this woman. And all three answers came out correct. Now, how do you explain that? How do you explain that? I had maybe a three-minute conversation with her.
Yep.
She didn't give me any details. And I told her, I said, the less you tell me, the better. And she told me just very basic information, like his name, and here's his ashes, and, you know, that kind of thing. So I went in completely blind. To me, I think that builds a lot more credibility when I actually come up with something and show it to him. Like, oh my God, there's a thing of a little girl walking around here. And all of a sudden I capture a picture of a little girl without knowing that.
Yep.
Then it kind of correlates things together. So I know a lot of people, the paranormal investigators, what's going on, what have you seen, and they want all the content and the history on it. And that's important, don't get me wrong. But I usually go wander around and try to see, you know, if I can see or find or basically experience something I have no knowledge of to see what I get.
Yeah.
You know?
I have no problem with someone telling me their experiences and, you know, sharing it story-wise. But I agree, if we're going in for an investigation, the most that I'd want to hear from you, I mean the most, is I've seen apparitions, I've heard voices, and they're shadows.
Right. Now, if it's a case where people are really having some bad activity, getting scratched heavily and all that kind of stuff, then I need to know more. I need to kind of know what we're dealing with. You know, but most of the time, for a normal investigation, you know, we have someone on the team asking those questions. I know Pete really likes to listen to what people have to say and get a run of it. And he usually asks a bunch of questions because he's like a historical guy. So he tries to find out a lot about what's going on.
I do it backwards because when I'm trying to reach out to him, I'm reaching specifically for that person. Like you guys are doing your general sweeps. I'm zoning right into, like, if Harry Crum is the owner that was there,
right,
then I go right for Harry Crum. And then I know
right
about his time zone and...
Right.
What they
and he's
but
perfect
that's
with that kind of stuff.
That's great to have. I mean, a team that's going to go out and do the work that needs to be done, and the one guy or two people that are going to really focus on the
mm-hmm
situation, I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah, because he'll basically want to know names and specifics, and he'll put together a plan during an investigation to try to contact people that are there. So I'll come up, Pete, there's something weird going on. I'm getting this and that. He'll be, ask for Harry. Okay. So I'll start asking for Harry or some names that he's given me, and then we start getting responses. It builds some validity because I don't know who they are, but he does,
yeah,
you know, or vice versa. I'll get the information, he'll go wander around, you know. So it just kind of builds credibility. Part of the team knows and part of the team doesn't, to see who gets what for experiences.
A good example was the Hulbert House in Boonville. You, Mark, and I believe David were down there for a good 40 minutes talking to something and communicating through the K2s and through the spirit box. I think Mark came upstairs. He got me. He's like, maybe you should come down here. He's like, because I don't really know what's going on. And when I got down there, that's when we started zoning right into that specific time frame. All right, are you from the 1800s, 1700s, right. 1780, 90? And we narrowed it down to where we actually got an audio EVP on the camera, audio recorders, where he answered a direct question that did he keep the tavern that was originally on the site long before the hotel was built, maybe 100 years later. So that's just a quick example of, like Rich is saying, where I would, they're doing their thing, but I came in and zoned right in for whoever was there.
Right, because a lot of, in an older place like that, when you start having things with the history that place has, well, Peter come in, he'll have so much more knowledge of the history, he'll start zoning it down and try to figure if it's actually valid or not by asking those questions. Where we're just like, okay, Pete, we got some activity. You want to come down here? We're getting hits. We're just asking, like, you know, what's your name? Or did you die here? I mean, you know, the basic core set of questions. And then he'll start going into, like, you know, based on his knowledge of the history, what happened in that area, start to get very specific. Then if you're starting to get hits with specific questions that are that deep into the history, then you almost kind of have something. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think it brings more validity.
A very interesting point to that is for other investigators or wannabe investigators that are out there listening, is with that, we're going to have a lot of investigators that don't get into the history like Pete's doing. So we're going to go up there, and if it is a well-known place that they knew, you know, the owner from way back when, the investigators are actually going to be asking for that person. Whereas if Pete goes down and starts talking to the people there, you can find out that it was a young Billy, the little helper in the house, is actually the one that's active. Then he can come up to you and say, you know, ask for Billy. He's a kid. Put some toys out.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. No, I completely agree with you.
Hobart House. Hobart House, to me, is like one of the best places to investigate. I mean, I put that easily in the top three of where we go, because every time we've gone there, I don't know how it happens. You talk about weirdness, but we zone into something. We got the little girl that's there. We got the guy that was from the 1700s. Rich and I have seen, like, the apparitions of the ladies walking through the thing. I even zoned in on the Italian owner there, to the point he was talking about the garrote that they found on the Haunted Collector episode. And he's talking, and then he started swearing at me in Italian over the Frank's box. Told me to go do something to my mother, so I told him what he could go do, and then it just started. I mean, honest to God, it's like, where does that come from? Like Rich is saying, everybody wants that one defining moment. Like, we do the tours and stuff, and people are like, oh my God, I want to see something, I want to see something. It's like, you're trying too hard.
Yeah.
It's happening all around you. Just let it happen and pay attention. But if we can ever get back in to do a public event, that's always been a place for me. I think we're actually going right. Soon, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going to be there at the end of the month, tentatively set up to do an investigation with our team. I'm hoping it's going to be one of those we're going to go in late and stay pretty much all the way to the morning, because you really, in a place like that, to me, paranormal investigating is like building a fire. You know, you have to put all the right components in, the right wood and stuff, the right kindling. Then you start it and light it up, and everybody wants a huge bonfire, right? But it doesn't start out as a bonfire. It starts out as a small fire, generates some smoke, and then you got to stick with it for a while. You got to put the logs in, you got to burn a while, you got to get the hot coals and build onto it. So to get a fire the way you want it, you got to spend sometimes a couple hours getting it just the way you want it. It's like paranormal investigating. You go in, you start at 8 o'clock, you're running around kind of like, you know, touching things and steering things up. And then a couple hours go by and you're like, oh, I'm getting some little hits and there and that. And people are like, okay, well, there's nothing going on, let's go home. Well, that's the wrong thing to do. As you go through the night, it's all this poking and stirring, and you're kind of stirring the coals. And I think, firmly believe, later on as you go through the night, things will start to happen. It'll start to get to the point where, like, let's do something. You know what I mean? And then you start to get some stuff. 2-3 o'clock in the morning sometimes.
Yep.
But it happens. You know, and the Herkimer place we investigated, was it the courthouse?
Yes. Yes. I always confuse that in the jailhouse. Yes, the courthouse. The courthouse.
Jail's across the street.
Well, the courthouse we did, and yeah, did you hear the noise?
Mm-hmm.
The courthouse is one of those places where I think we left too early, because I talked to another paranormal group. It's like, you got to stay till like 12 o'clock, then leave, go to Denny's and get a bite to eat, then come back, and then all kinds of stuff happens. So I think you just, it's just a matter of finally getting to the point where it's like, all right, we're going to start communicating with you, or start moving things.
It's like a party. You got to get to know everybody there, and you'll, by the end of the night, you guys are good friends.
There you go.
So can I pose another question to you for your
gentleman's
expertise? No, this is right along that line. Like, for a while there, we had different investigators, different techniques. I mean, a lot of us, I don't want to say older guys, but experienced,
you can say that,
investigators stopped going. We figured, let the newer people, the newer team members, go have some fun. But they weren't finding anything, weren't experiencing anything. Do you think that's because, and maybe this is for teams out there, or people that get discouraged, maybe it's because they look at it as a chore? And what I mean by that, it's like, okay, we're going to be investigating from 12 to 2, and it's like, oh my God, it's only 10:30, it's 11 o'clock, oh my God, how long do we... It's more like they're not even looking or receptive to it anymore. Do you know what I'm trying to say? It's not like they're there to, I don't want to say not to help or not to experience it, but it's like they're just not paying attention. Does that make sense? I mean,
it's kind of easy to get discouraged if you're not getting any evidence in a house or in any other place that you're investigating. But, I mean, you got to stick with it. If you're only there for a certain amount of time, you got to make the best of the time you had. And if you're going there expecting to see something, you're going to miss it.
Like Rich and I were talking, I believe, a week or so ago about this. It's like we were doing like the house investigations from like 9 to midnight. Nothing was happening. And I agree with them. Really, until about 2 o'clock, between 2 and 4, that seems to be like the sweet spot where we usually have, like, the Hulbert house. As soon as she goes quiet, the bar closes, they have everything cleaned up, she settles for a half hour, and then it's just...
It's almost like the house comes alive, you know? Yeah, no, I agree. I think sometimes people want you to come in, like, 8 o'clock at night and start an investigation and be out by 10. It's like, well, you know, we'll get what we get, but sometimes we have to be there a while. Sometimes they take a certain amount of poking and prodding before they decide to react,
yeah,
to communicate, to do anything. And, you know, that's why the best results we've ever had, like at the Hulbert house, was, you know, the very last couple hours of investigation before we did our dead time. We did dead time at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, or basically equipment off, except maybe voice recorders, and different investigators would sit in different parts of the Hulbert house. And we just do like half hour to hour, whatever. Complete radio silence, everything. Just observe, listen, you know, and see what would happen. And sometimes you start hearing steps, footsteps.
That laughter.
Freaking laughing.
Freaking kids laughing out of nowhere. It's like, where the hell is that coming from?
Yeah.
Dead time for me is actually one of my favorite times. It's at that point, I usually find a place to either sit down, or even if I'm on the floor, I'm laying down, and I'll just kind of relax my whole body, close my eyes, and just try and experience something. I mean, you start taking away some of your senses. Like I said, I close my eyes, it enhances some of your other senses, your mm-hmm. sense of smell, your hearing, sense of touch. And, I mean, to me, it's just a comfort level for me. At dead time, it's just a nice time to relax, but at the same time, you get some of the best experiences you can.
I do a lot of my audio sessions with my eyes closed. And I'm into it, and I'm starting to get things. I'll close my eyes, and
yep.
I'll, like, you know, essentially just grab my head, and I'll just kind of, like, focus
yep.
on that audio recorder or that Frank's box to see if I can pick something. Like I said, like, I shut off one sense, maybe I can enhance the other one, you know? But I don't know. It's that time is something I've done a few times with the group, and we've heard some pretty interesting things. And it's almost like, I mean, one time we did the Hulbert house, I'm positive we came across a vortex. The energy in that ballroom was so intense, it was nauseating. And, I mean, it was just like you walk into it and, like, the K2s were going off, and the the thermostats were dropping down. It was just very, very intense. And then we basically set a chair in the room, right in the middle of it, and then we went down to the basement. And the basement doesn't correlate. So you go down the basement, you start wandering around, and you're kind of like, where really are we in a proximity to the level above us? You don't really kind of know. And then you kind of walk around, and then we found that vortex again. And what was weird about it is there was a door laying on the floor, and the vortex was right there where the door was laying on the floor. And so we left an investigator up at the chair. We put an investigator there who pretty much, I mean, he walked into the room. I mean, tables will be floating, everything. He walks in the room, and he just, boom, stops. So we put him up there. So here, you sit here. Do you feel anything? Nope. Okay, you stay there. And then we're like, okay, we're in position. Pound on the floor, your foot. Like, boom, boom. And also dust is falling on our heads. It was right above us. We found that area, and basically we told him to be super quiet, we don't like hear you talking right above us. And it was like the exact same location in the basement as it was on the floor above. Tense amount of energy. I mean, it's like, I mean, you walk in there, I don't know how people couldn't feel it. It made me sick. I almost puked my brains out. It was horrible. But that, to me, I talked to Chris Moon about that. He goes, that's a vortex, man. Sort of like all this energy. It's almost like a ripple? Is that what you use? Maybe it's a ripple.
The rift in time.
Rift in time. Maybe that's like a door that opens up. They can come in and out because it was just so intense. And then maybe they go and the door closes. So maybe it's something like a door that they know that's there. And if they find it, and all of a sudden they run out and escape to this world. And then all of a sudden they go back. I don't know. It's weird, man. Maybe we're never going to know until we actually become a spirit, hopefully.
I will.
That's a good thing.
I will say what was scary in that one location when we had John Zaffis up there for the Haunted Collector party and event that we did. His Frank's box, whatever came through there, with methodically just started naming every member of his family. Like, boom, 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 boom. And he just started swearing. He shut the box off. And he left. So, you know, we're like 30 people in the basement. We're like, should we, like, run with him or just stand there in the dark? But there was one point, I thought one of our teammates was standing next to me. I mean, you couldn't see more than... You couldn't even actually see your own hand in front of your face. But I knew we'd walk down together. I knew he wasn't that far away from me. And you could, you know, that sense that somebody's standing there. And I was like, Alex, did you, something with the recorder? And I hear his voice from across the room. And it's like, who the hell is standing next to me? Because he wasn't even near me. And we were the only two down there at that point. It's like, okay. And then he's like, well, I didn't want to tell you. He's like, but I kept getting, like, mental pictures of a guy in uniform. And then apparently that guy in uniform was one of Zaffis's relatives that was calling. I mean, that's, you know, not to set this up if you've never been to the Hulbert House, but like Rich is saying, and it's on every level. It's the basement, the back room, the dining room. Actually, have we really gotten anything in the bar? I don't think we've ever really investigated the bar.
No, the restaurant was pretty active. We were getting some hits on the K2s and some audio recordings. The back ballroom, the back bar and ballroom was pretty intense. Some of the rooms on the second floor and, of course, the third floor was crazy.
My favorite, though, was during one of them events. I always say I don't know how you explain these things to people. They must think you're full of a horse pucky. But something was going on in one of the rooms. There were about 20 of us in there, and everybody had their K2s and this and that. And the lady said something. She's like, you shut your mouth. I'm going to bring you to church and wash your mouth out with soap. Instantly, like if you snapped your finger, every K2 meter in the room pegged to bright red. And it stayed there. And I'm like, okay, we're done. But she didn't stop. She kept saying it. I'm going to bring you to church. I'm going to bring... And then it came over the Frank's box in one complete audible sentence. Shut up, you blank pig. I'm going to push you down the stairs.
Wow.
So I shut the thing off. I'm like, that's it. We're done. We walk the crowd out. We go to the staircase because we're on the second floor. I'm like, go ahead. She said, I'm not going down the stairs. I said, well, either we all go before you or you're going first because I told you not to agitate it. I shouldn't say it, because we don't really know what we're talking to, but whatever you did, you pissed that spirit off, period. I mean, I've never seen... It literally was like a finger snap. Like, and that's where you start feeling... That's where it's psychosomatic, because now you're making yourself sick. It's like, oh, that's not good. No, that's not good.
Yeah, there's, you know, once in a while, during an investigation, when we do a public event, I'll do a little bit of a litmus test, where essentially I'm like, especially when I got some kids. We had a group that was coming to some of our events, and they're a little obnoxious. And for some reason, I always got stuck with them at some point. And so I'm down there.
You're the new guy.
I'm like, oh my God, I think something just touched my ear. Nothing happened. I just wanted to see what I was dealing with in my little party. And they'd be like, oh my God, something just touched my ear too. Something's been touching my ear for an hour. And then it's just like, all right, so it's going to be a big drama thing. You know? So every shadow they see, every noise they hear is going to be a ghost. That's my little test to see what kind of group I had. But I don't do that. I mean, I only do that with a specific group because they would never stop talking, and they're always like, I think I just saw a ghost. I mean, you're just like, kind of like, you know, they shouldn't be doing these events. They shouldn't go to them. So that I would always do that little test to see where I stood with those people. Most of the people don't say anything, but I know we did an investigation at the shops one time, and it was in the basement. We did a spirit box session, and there was a gentleman and his sister, older, you know, that come to a lot of our events, and his wife recently passed a few months beforehand, and we're doing the Frank box session downstairs, and all of a sudden, his wife came through. He goes, I think that's my wife. So I asked her, can you please tell us your name? And she came back and said her first name, and then she came back and said her last name. And he was almost in tears. And that's my wife. He's like, I love you, honey. I love you. I miss you. And then you hear, I love you too. And I was just like, whoa. I was like, I'm getting goosebumps for sure. I was thinking about it. Of course, I didn't have an audio recorder set up yet. It just got set up, and I was like trying to get all the groups positioned, and then basically I went over to the table. And they already started, like, asking questions. But that, to me, was pretty freaking amazing. I heard the name. I heard her voice and everything come through. Now, I know, like, some people in our group, like Dr. Dave, all I hear is... And you're like, I think I heard the name Jim. I think he said I died here. I'm like, I don't know what you're hearing, but... I mean, then I had, like, one recording where it was, like, dead silence I played for him. And then the name Dick came. I said, Dick... It was like that. He goes, I don't hear it. I'm like, I hear this. I played it like 17 times. Listen, right here. Now, I don't hear it. It says it right there. I turn it up loud and put it in a speaker. I don't hear it. I'm like, oh my God, dude, really? Are you kidding me?
So, see, that's a perfect example of your consciousness blocking the subconscious.
Good point. Maybe that's essentially what it is. Didn't want to hear it, so blocked it out. I mean, I played it. For other people, just to make sure I wasn't going insane, it was just me hearing it. Other people, I said, what do you hear? And I said, right about now. And they say, I just heard the name Dick. Okay, so it's just not me. Okay. And it was like kind of like a disembodied voice. It wasn't like a one coming from a Frank's box. It was just like, it came like on the other recorder, but it didn't come through the Frank's box. So,
wow.
Which was kind of really cool, I thought.
Now, am I allowed to talk about the video? I probably should have asked you before we came on the air. But when you showed us beforehand.
No. Go ahead. Talk about it.
We got to watch a very interesting video where something, a piece of jewelry, was physically manipulated on one of the participants in an investigation. That's the kind... I haven't seen that yet in real life, but that's the kind of thing I would actually love to see. Just so it breaks down that last barrier, like, I've seen it, damn it. I was right there, and I watched the damn thing lift up right. There was nobody near, nobody did that. I saw it. That's the one last, for me, that's like my bucket list guy. Or like a full-blown levitation or something flying off a shelf.
Right,
that,
right.
Like, there's no mistaking it. I mean, it was a physical act of, I mean, I don't know if you want to share the video link or whatever, but that was actually a very interesting thing to see.
Yeah. No, I don't have a problem at all. It was a video that was given to me by one of my clients. His name is Christopher Moon. Chris Moon is one of those very controversial people in the paranormal world. He's a paranormal investigator and a psychic. And a lot of people in the paranormal community have basically, you know, given him a lot of crap about what he does. And, you know, and he's one of the first people to really integrate the use of the True Franks box, like with all his investigations and sessions and everything. And I was editing a demo video for him, and it's going to be up on YouTube on a Chris Moon paranormal page, so you can check it out there. I'm going to put the finishing touches on it tonight. But essentially, he was in a Frank's Box session with a group of people, and so there was no way he could set this up for anything to happen, because I know the people he did it with. And all of a sudden, the voices are coming through about he wants to talk to you, he wants to talk about your necklace. So he zoomed the camera in up on the necklace, and the first time, you could see the necklace. It was like a V-shaped. And you could see the chain sort of lifting a little bit, and then the necklace moved, the V part of it. But the first time you looked at it, it's like, that's actually kind of cool, but maybe she's doing it, because she coughed once. And when you coughed, you could see it move a little bit. So maybe it's like her neck muscles or something, because she's nervous. But then the second time they showed it, when he asked to do it again, the spirit wanted to play with her necklace again, and it showed it, you could see the thing freaking flip upside down, point straight up, and then go back down again. And she was pretty still. I mean, she wasn't flinching. Her neck muscles weren't, like, contracting or jittery or anything. So I thought to myself, that is actually pretty cool evidence. I mean, that was, I mean, happening right there with a group of, like, I don't know, maybe 20 people, and it was happening. And that person that was coming through Frank's box, the girl knew because she was crying, and said his name and said that, you know, we miss you and stuff like that. So whatever he connected with knew that girl, that young lady in the actual video. So that to me is just another little piece of proof to show that there is something going on, that it's not always, you know, oh, that's a hoax, or she did that, or you're just hearing things, you know, the usual things that we get.
So you refer to that as controversial, or his style is controversial. But to me, like all this tech that's come and gone, I think that was always a bunch of crap.
Right.
I think he's doing that the right way. And he does have a lot of videos out on YouTube. I've watched several of them. There's a lot of interesting stuff out there. But that's a specific thing where he's that's physical mediumship, basically, we're going back to. So as we've always said for years, with all this technology, we're going right back to where we were in the 1840s. We're going back to move the table, move an object, knock on the wall,
exactly.
Do something to physically manipulate your environment. Because we don't know if all these gadgets are picking up Wi-Fi, cell phone. I mean, right now we're in an age of where everything is Wi-Fi. So
we're so technologically advanced, and you could create anything out of nothing now. So it's almost like it's time to go back to the Stone Age of paranormal investigator.
Yep, and what they used to do is, when I had a discussion with Lloyd Auerbach, did I say that correctly?
Yes, I believe so.
When he was talking to me about doing some work together, me being his agent, I said, well, part of the lectures I book includes a ghost hunt. He said, well, if I'm going to do a ghost hunt, I need a psychic. I'm like, what do you mean? That's how I do the ghost hunt. I go along with the psychic and try to capture evidence. That's old school. That's what they, isn't that like psychic photography? The psychic says, something's going on here. And everybody starts taking pictures and pulling out their tape recorders and trying to record something. So that's kind of like the old school method. Now we kind of like taking the psychic out of the equation to a certain extent. Now we have these like handheld psychic tools, you know, the ovulus and the spirit box. And I'm sure there's a few others I missed. And we're trying to implement that into it. But like Kevin said, I mean, we're so technologically advanced. Are we really picking up anything, or is it? I mean, I think in certain instances we are, based on how it happens. But a lot of the times, are we just getting random hits based on someone's Apple Watch or phone or something, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we're about to be out. We can carry that on next show, because that's actually a very good topic, I think. Rich, we have what, classes coming up next week on April 14th? Why can I not remember the date? Thursday, April 14th at the Shops at the Finish Line?
We do. It's our paranormal training class. And we're going to have it's called the 101 class, which is essentially the beginner paranormal training class. Essentially, it's Paranormal 101. The cost is $40 per person, and you know, with that, we have two classes, one on the 14th that runs from 7 to 9, and one on the 21st that runs from 7 to 11:30 at night, where we actually do an investigation of the shops at the finish line. So they're going to be serving food, coffee, and wine and beer, I think they now have.
I'm going to bring a cake.
Yeah, and Pete's going to bring a cake. So Kevin, myself, and Pete will be there to add to the lecture and share with you some of our experience and knowledge.
Yeah.
We hope you come down. You're definitely going to learn something. And if Pete has anything to do with it, you're going to have a good time. So it's definitely worth the money.
Well, you guys are fun, too. This weekend, we're in Salem, Massachusetts for SalemCon 2. And then a congratulations to Kevin and Maeve. It's their Jack and Jill this weekend.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay.
It's almost...
Dude, like, I would love to go, but I'm gonna. They're going to be in Salem. I'm going to be in Wisconsin.
I wish I was in Salem.
We can go back. But on that note, I guess we're going to be out of here this week. So if you have any questions, hit up our Facebook page, Rome Investigators of the Paranormal. I'm Peter Leonard.
I'm Rich Nicodem.
And I'm Kevin Jordan.
And thank you for tuning in to Paranormal Investigator Radio on the BBS Radio Network.
Peace out.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.